Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's much simpler to say good afternoon now that we are in the midst of some of the longest days of the year, my favorite days of the year, frankly. So good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good middle of the night, I don't know. Hello, this is the horn, Friday on the front porch. Friday on the front porch for this, the 6th day of June, 2014. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you'll find news of the day, which I was remiss in getting to today. I apologize sincerely. As well as access to the chat room, and the media player for listening on a PC. Of course, if you're listening on a mobile device, then things like Stitcher and TuneIn Radio work just dandy. With a gentle reminder that none of the ads that you may see thereon actually go to the benefit of the horn. That's how they pay themselves for running other people's stuff. And we're happy to have them run it that way, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, those two applications work just dandy for mobile or smart device listening. Also, at the horn's home, you will find the ever-present PayPal button and the ever-present traditional mail address, both of which we use in tandem to keep the bills paid at this here little operation. And, it has been insufficiently used this week for a variety of reasons. I got us off to a rocky start by not being here on Monday, which kind of put us in a hole, and we've been trying to dig our way out of that ever since. But nonetheless, we have reached the end of the first full week of June, and it's been an interesting week, and we've got some stuff to sort out, some stuff left over in the stack, and some new stuff, and it's Friday on the front porch, which means that later in the broadcast. We will also go to our roundtable panel of experts who are not inside the Washington Beltway pundits who think they know much more than they actually do, but real live, honest-to-God human beings living on planet Earth who know more than perhaps they are actually aware, because they carry. They are, you know, they're a handful of the people who carry this country and this planet. Because, see, that is how it works. No matter how much we fetishize, no matter how much we lionize, no matter how much we worship wealth in this and other countries, the fact of the matter is it is working people, who make this planet go. And so that's our expert roundtable on Friday on the front porch. Okay, then there's that, Devin. Ordinary folks who know more than we want to know. True indeed. So we'll get that up and running later in the program. Now, because we aren't real sure about the technology, it's hard to say whether or not, well, it's not, we're just not going to. We're not going to use the Skype phone number for Friday on the front porch. And a reminder that at present the telephone processing unit is kaput, as in not working. I was challenged on my assertion that it is literally smoked, but No, you can take the top panel off, and you can see the smoke collected on the interior of the top panel of the telephone processing unit. So it is, literally, smoked. I'll just throw words around. But anyway, we are in a fundraising hole. That fundraising hole is $380 deep. And we need to remedy that because that's no way to try to get through the month of June and up into July and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I am proud to announce that this Friday, the 6th day of June, 2014, finds us with Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. You know, the Pull the Pin Challenge is used for, Sparky uses it for times when the things are looking a little bit dire, looking a little bit grim, and therefore something needs to be, you know, done sort of post-haste. So if we can get the Pull the Pin Challenge, which is $100, met, that will mean that we have met 200 of the $380 hole. Now, if we can just find 38 folks with 10 bucks apiece or any combination thereof, then by Jove, we can get completely out of the hole, which would be nice. So let's see where the evening takes us. Wander on into the chat room, the headonradionetwork.com chat room. It's free, it's easy, and the conversation is Jim Dandy there. You just have to be willing to just jump right in, be friendly. No, don't lurk. Don't just sit there and watch. Say howdy, say hi, be nice. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. And a reminder, just because of its ongoing value, you really want to catch up this weekend, assuming you have time. And I believe they have been put up. Let me just check here real quick. Won't take but a second. There we are. There we are. Yes, I had to double check to make sure that Ben had in fact posted these files. Catch up this week with Dr. Bill's two programs from Tuesday and Wednesday, because he began a detailed examination of how the Bill of Rights to the Constitution came into being. I was talking with Dr. Bill and Boss Man Wayne earlier today. We got together over in Beckley, and we just went about conversing a little bit on the topicality of these past two programs Dr. Bill has created. And my, oh my, oh my, it's nothing like anything you were ever taught in school. I don't want to spoil anything, but I mean, come on, it's 200 plus year old history. How could I possibly spoil it? I have a completely new, thanks to Dr. Bill, I have a completely new perspective on just what it means when I walk around Washington, D.C. And Boss Man Wayne and I were talking a little bit about it earlier as well, because we are given this mythologized, sanitized version of the framers of the Constitution as being some sort of saintly men who sat down and soberly and pontificatiously, wow, is that even a word? It is now. Went about the business of setting up the new federal government. If you listen to Dr. Bill's two programs from Tuesday and Wednesday, you will find out that nothing could be further from the truth. That, in fact, these were venal men, that these were petty, bickering men. These were men who would punish the new nation simply because they did not get their political way in a squabble. You'll find out, and again, I'm not trying to, this is no reason not, oh, okay, is that what it's about? Then I'm not going to download it. The capital of the country is in Washington, D.C. because of the efforts of James Madison. All right? Because James Madison and others wanted to honor, okay, we'll get to that, George Washington, the first president, who gave up power peacefully. There was a peaceful trend. There was no second revolution. He term limited himself. He said, I've had two terms. That is enough. And so, lo and behold, the land upon which Washington, D.C. sits just all happened to be, just coincidentally, happened to be land that George Washington owned. Can you imagine if something like that happened in the modern era? We'd probably have congressional hearings about it and maybe two or three indictments, but that was then and this is now. George Washington took them out. They went out for a little carriage ride out from Mount Vernon. And see, Martha and I have long sat and on the veranda there at Mount Vernon and thought, wouldn't that little hill over there be a lovely place for a little old national capital? Yeah. So, that didn't sit well with a guy from Philly named Robert Morris, who had bought up with his own perfectly good money a couple of hundred acres on the Delaware River over near said Philadelphia. Because he was just absolutely sure that Philly would be the permanent national capital of the young country. Dear God, there's just something off-putting. Aren't you glad it's not? I'll probably piss a few people off, but really, Philly? And what flows from that, and you'll find this out in Dr. Bill's two programs from earlier this week, what flows from that is how the amendments to the Constitution got to where they are. Because being James Madison was this little tiny fella with this great big mind who made words dance on the page like ballerinas upon the stage. And so he came around. At first, he didn't think we needed any amendments to the Constitution. But then he came around to it, and he started working on it, and he presented these brilliantly reasoned arguments for the amendments. And there sat Robert Morris, seething with jealousy, seething with a petty grudge against James Madison for not putting the capital of the United States in Philly. Ugh. I'm really going to get the hate mail from Philly, aren't I? I just can't conceive of the national. I probably should work on that. But there you go. And a whole lot of the problems that we have right here, right now, arise from that grudge, that vain grievance. So that's a long way around to say, please, go and download these two programs from Dr. Bill. Sign up for the RSS feed for his podcasts. And with all that having been said, a program note. There will be no Dr. Bill programs this coming week. It's my understanding that Dr. Bill is hieing himself hence for Fair Boston, wherein he will spend some where he'll spend some quality time with his brother and sister. And much safe travels, Dr. Bill, and welcome home when you get home. So all in all, that's no Dr. Bill next week, but we'll probably be rerunning these, at least these two programs, because I think everybody should, because we are in the middle of a lot of different conversations about, well, for instance, what the Second Amendment means. And the fact of the matter is, the Second Amendment doesn't mean what people think it means. The Second Amendment doesn't mean what 99.9% of the American people probably think it means. And that's the people who are pro-guns everywhere and people who think, nah, not so much. But if you will listen to these two programs, you'll find out where it came from and why it is the way it is and how it got to be the way it is. And once again, but for those petty grievances and pissant jealousies, we wouldn't have the question never would have been able to be presented to the Supreme Court for them to screw up America with the Heller decision. Nope. Irish Dave pointing out Washington Ghazi. Who knew? The oft-repeated tale of Washington working for a single continental almost always fails to explore his paid expenses, which were substantial. Next time you visit Valley Forge, compare and contrast the troops barracks to Washington's headquarters with separate slave quarters. Oh, yeah. In fact, way back in the 70s, some historian published a book called George Washington's Expense Account, which would put the most, back in the days when things like three martini lunches were tax deductible, it would put the most diligent note taker from Madison Avenue or anywhere else to shame. It would put Harry Carey to shame. A brilliant segment on Keith Olbermann's program recently, talking about the discovery of Harry Carey's expense diaries. It's charming. It's a little bit funny. But, yeah, Harry Carey, the famous baseball announcer, kept track of every penny he ever spent in a bar, on drinks, on beers, whatever, and apparently bought beers for just about everybody in the country, because we once had a tax code that said that stuff was deductible. It was a kind of welfare for the business class. That sort of thing went away in the tax reform of 1986. So I guess this has been rather a long advertisement for Dr. Bill's program, but by God, there's never a bad time for that. Because all you have to do, I don't know if your Facebook's like my Facebook page, but all you have to do is wander around for a little bit, and the next thing you know, it won't take long at all before you're seeing some idiot opining about the true meaning of the, and it'll be some portion of the Constitution, and there they will go, going absolutely nuts, being 100%, oh my God, not kidding, wrong about whatever it is they're opining about. Oh, let's see. What would be a good example? Well, the Second Amendment. Now, you may have heard Tracy talking on the program last night about the guy who leaped onto her Facebook page to white mansplain, or to mansplain to her, why it is that she was all wrong about the Second Amendment. And the guy in the process managed to be absolutely wrong about the Second Amendment as well. And then there are those right-wingers out there who want to say that the 14th Amendment doesn't grant citizenship. Maybe bloviating Devin, sure. They want to say, the 14th Amendment doesn't really grant citizenship just because you're born here.
It does.
Or the question that I brought up to Dr. Bill over lunch today. Namely, how would James Madison have felt about the 14th Amendment? Remember, the 13th and 14th Amendments are the post-Civil War amendments. And it's the summary effect of the 14th in particular is to apply the strictures of the Constitution to the several states. And Dr. Bill wasted no time at all in saying, I think he'd be completely for the 14th, the 13th, and 14th. Well, the 14th Amendment in particular. I mean, the 13th, maybe not. He was, slaveholder and all that stuff, and it's kind of hard to forget. But you can't even get common agreement in this day and age, in this country, on whether we ought to have a 14th Amendment. I don't know if you caught this earlier in the day, but one of those sovereign citizen types, and of course a lawful gun owner into the process, attacked a Georgia courthouse today. The guy was shot and killed. Dennis Marks showed up at the Forsyth County Administration Building. That's the county that was diligently maintained all white way up into the late 1980s and early 1990s. Dennis Mark showed up at the Forsyth County Administration Building. He brought with him an assault rifle, a bulletproof vest, smoke grenades, and a gas mask. He also had ammunition, bottled water, snacks, zip ties, and buckets. No, that's how the news story reads. Buckets of homemade explosives. Forsyth County Sheriff Dwayne Piper said, he came here with the purpose of occupying the courthouse. The news account continues. He deployed stop sticks at the courthouse entrance to prevent other vehicles from driving closer, and then started shooting. That's when a deputy showed up. And shooting through the windshield of his car, killed Dennis Marks. Sheriff Piper remarked, it would be a guess to think how many lives he saved had he not engaged him right there. Mr. Marks' intention was to get inside that front door and to take hostages. Dennis Marks was 48 years old. Local authorities knew him well as a member of the so-called Sovereign Citizens Movement. He was also, surprise, a firearms dealer. His attorney later said that she had withdrawn from a case that he had on distribution of cannabis as well as firearms possession. Why did it have to be cannabis? Poor little innocent. Well, I'll tell you why it had to be cannabis. because Georgia still has it doesn't have a prohibition on carrying black stag and nut pole Brazilac and God blessed guns at Little League games, but you know, you can't carry a blunt at a Little League game. Not that I'm saying that you should. I think both should probably not be taken to Little League parks. By the way, sovereign citizens are in no wise leftist, liberal, progressive. Oh, no. But anyway, his lawyer asked for and received leave on Thursday to withdraw from his case because he didn't like how she was negotiating with the state of Georgia. Georgia with a prohibition on cannabis, but no prohibition on guns. Ms. Schaefer said she went so far as to ask Mr. Marks to undergo a psychological evaluation, and here's the important part, but he refused. You see, he's a sovereign citizen, and that means he should just be able to carry any old gun he wants to take, any old place he wants to take it. Because Second Amendment. See previous admonition to listen to Dr. Bill's programs of the 3rd and 4th of June of this week. Because the Second Amendment does not mean that you get to take a gun, let's say, to target. Oh, and yeah, a little bit of catch-up work on that. Last night, toward the end of the program, I mentioned in conversation with Tracy that, yes, over in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Stan, employees at Target, who might want to think about rebranding and renaming under the circumstances, employees at Target found what they thought was a toy pistol in the toy department of Target. Because we still haven't quite gotten past that guns are a good thing to make into toys thingy. But no, a worker at Target found a toy, what they thought, he or she thought was a toy pistol in the toy department sitting on top of a Play School Superheroes table thing, toy. What was thought to be a toy pistol turned out not to be one. And not only did it turn out to be a real pistol, but it also turned out to be really, no kidding, oh my God, loaded in the toy department of Target. It didn't take any time at all. In fact, I saw this last night after the program ended. It didn't take any time at all for the gun goobers to craft a news release. Wolverines! No, it didn't say that. But one of the hallmarks, see Dennis Marks 48, sovereign citizen who tried to occupy the Forsyth County Courthouse, one of the hallmarks of these gun goobs is just galloping paranoia. Remember that Barack Obama's going to come for all of our guns, even though he's never... I think the only real gun law that has ever been put into effect under the Obama administration was to make it legal to tote guns in national parks. But anyway, over at Target, what was thought to be a toy pistol was actually a real live, honest-to-goodness, 9mm handgun with 8 rounds inside it. No clear ownership, and no report of it having been stolen. Open Carry Texas then, as noted, chimed in. via its president, C.J. Grisham, and all the voices in his head. Grisham said, "Target is currently in the crosshairs of gun control extremists who will stoop to no level too low." Sort out yourself. I don't have time to diagram this shit. "Who will stoop to no level too low to effectuate their agenda. Our children are our most precious commodity." There we are again. Didn't we talk about this a couple of nights ago? Oh, yeah, we did. And it was another guy in, this guy was in Alabamistan, who said he should, instead of using the quote from Adolf Hitler about children, should have gone with Herbert Hoover, who said children are our most precious resource, therefore defining children as something to be profitized and commodified. Well, C.J. Griffin is apparently right there with him. "Our children are our most precious commodity," you know, like butter, beans, rice, wheat, pork bellies. "Our children are our most precious commodity, and intentionally putting them in any kind of danger to exploit a personal agenda is deranged, sick, and twisted." See what he was trying to do there? He was trying to say that moms demand action for gun sense in America had put the loaded pistol in the toy department of Target in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, so as to make open carry Texas, which incidentally is not in South Carolina, look bad. Bless their hearts, the membership of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. A, they're really, really brave, because they have stood up to sickening threats against their physical well-being from these gun paranoids, ammosexuals, and we have a new word, gundamentalists, firearms gundamentalists. No, the Moms Demand Action people are actually intelligent, whereas the open carry people are, as we say, "Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me." Spokeswoman for Moms Demand Action saying, "Only one organization has a history of bringing loaded guns into Target, and it's not us." That could not have been more profoundly worded had she added at the end of that, "just saying." Target, meanwhile, whose lawyers immediately had the onset of a near-crippling case of the turtle squirts, said, "We take these matters very seriously, and we are partnering with local law enforcement on this incident. Because this matter is under active investigation, we are unable to share additional information." Hey, Target, if you take it so damn seriously, then do what Chili's and Chipotle did. Say, "No firearms are allowed on our premises or in our store." See, Target, that's how you prove that you really are serious about the issue. But anyway, interestingly, getting back to Dennis Marx, see how it is with them Marxists in Georgia. Dennis Marx, no kin to Carl or Groucho. Dennis Marx refused to have to undergo a psychological evaluation because, like most of the freedom protector woods, they couldn't pass one. Because the thing about the freedom protector woods is that they can seem perfectly reasonable until you start asking them about their guns, and they start, and then the music starts, you know. Yeah. Meanwhile, still in Georgia, and I'm not trying to just wear this gun issue out, but it seems rather significantly more important in the grand scope of the ongoing life of the republic, such as it is, than say the ongoing smear of Bo Bergdahl. I just got a tweet in from Isaac. According to Fox 5 Atlanta, police in Cobb County, Georgia, now say two people are dead after a shooting incident at a Kroger supermarket in Cobb County. That's the greater Atlanta area, in case you were wondering. Oh, just one last little factoid about Dennis Marks. Sheriff Piper noted that Marks's home, from which he had apparently been absent for some 10 days, was booby-trapped to be one great big bomb, and that he had done this with explosives of his own making, because freedom. Does this prove even the tiniest bit unsettling to you? I mean, I have a lot of friends in Georgia still. I lived there for a while. Almost stayed there. And I worry about them. You've heard on a number of occasions, you've heard our good friend Mike Malloy talk about the threats that have been made on his life over the years down there. Well, understand this. An attack on a county courthouse, not a shooting at a Kroger, not a pretty obviously unhinged guy walking around a Georgia Little League park saying, "I got a gun. You want to see my gun? Look here, I'll show you my gun. You don't like my gun? Ain't nothing you can do about it, because I got a right to have it under the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution. I got a gun." None of those things will be sufficient to make the state of Georgia re-examine the foolhardiness of its guns everywhere bill, because that guns everywhere bill was passed with bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Democrats and Republicans alike. Well, hell yeah, everybody needs a gun! And one dares not consider or even try to stop to ponder what level of horror would make the state of Georgia reconsider its guns everywhere law. No. Because one doesn't even have to posit some sort of future horror as if any average shooting in gunned up America isn't sufficient. Georgia passed its guns everywhere law after the Sandy Hook massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. Georgia passed its do you remember? It was one of the more moving audio segments I think we've ever run on this program. Within the last year or so, the story of the unarmed woman who kept a gunned-up, unhinged person from shooting up a school in Atlanta. He was eventually taken in and disarmed. And that wasn't enough. No, that made the legislature of Georgia say, you know what we need? More guns. See, if everybody has a gun, then everybody will be pointing their guns at everybody else. Have you ever tried to hold a gun on someone else while you're sitting down to the to a big old steak, say, at the lone Outback Roadhouse Saloon? And you're trying to make sure you got your gun out so you can start shooting at any minute at the first sign of trouble. And that damn steak will not stay put on the plate. And so if you got your, and you're sawing at it, you're just not going to get a lot of it. Sooner or later, you're going to have to put the gun down, pick up the fork, hold the steak in place, and go sawing at the steak just to get a bite of the damn steak. And then you're going to have, the minute that you're done, you put down the knife, you pick up the fork, you pick up the bite of steak. Oh, goddamn, pick up the gun! Because only if everybody is covered by the muzzle of someone else's gun, can we make sure that nobody ever gets the drop on anybody. Do you want to live in that? Hint, you do. And of course, we had news last night of the shooting at the college in Seattle, and as of our last reporting, one of two gunmen were still at large. Well, that story sorted itself out with time. Over at Raw Story, Amanda Marcotte has commentary on it. She writes, the tragic story of another school shooting at Seattle Pacific University, but luckily the damage was clearly limited compared to what it could have been. While the police believe the shooter intended to kill many, many people, he only hit four, and only one has died. Jesus! That's the good news? Only one died and only four were shot? Whew! We sure dodged one there. Well, one person didn't. It turns out, though, the way that the attack was thwarted didn't involve a good guy with a gun stopping a bad guy with a gun, to quote the famous psychotic from the National Right Wing Rifle Association. I only describe Wayne LaPierre as a psychotic because I earnestly believe, in good faith, that were he to have certain psychometric testing applied to him, that he would come back, yeah, straitjacket material. I mean, you know, Hannibal Lecter hockey mask material. I'm not calling him names. I think he is truly psychotic, or at the very least, sociopathic. I think the axes of the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual 4th edition would light up like a drag strip Christmas tree as a qualified psychologist just checked off boxes as Wayne began talking about how everybody's dealing with to stop a bad guy with a gun's a good guy. And are you the good guy, Mr. LaPierre? I most certainly am. Lots of good guys. It's just, It's a terrible, frightening, scary country out there with those blah people. No, there was no good guy with a gun to take down the bad guy with a gun at Seattle Pacific University. According to the Seattle Times, John Meese, a student working as a building monitor, work study, you know, pepper sprayed the shooter as he stopped to reload and then put him in a chokehold and took him to the ground, according to police and a friend who spoke with Meese after the shooting. Then other students and faculty members rushed to hold the shooter down until police arrived. You might recall that during the attack on the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation in East Tennessee, to wit, Knoxville, you might recall that that shooter, that bad guy with a gun, was also taken down by good people with no guns. For the very simple reason that once the shooting starts, chaos reigns, and the likelihood of getting the bad guy with the gun is roughly commensurate as the likelihood of hitting an innocent. Amanda Marcotte, in her article at Raw Story, quotes from a 2012 article from Mother Jones. Here's the quote. "Not a single one of the 62 mass shootings we studied in our investigation has been stopped this way, to wit, with a good guy with a gun stopping a bad guy with a gun. Even as the nation has been flooded with millions of additional firearms and a barrage of recent laws has made it easier than ever for ordinary citizens to carry them in public places, including bars, parks, and schools. Attempts by armed citizens to stop shooters are rare. At least two such attempts in recent years ended badly, with the would-be good guys gravely wounded or killed. Meanwhile, the five cases most commonly cited as instances of regular folks stopping massacres fall apart under scrutiny. Either they didn't involve ordinary citizens taking action, those who intervened were actually cops, trained security officers, or military personnel, or the citizens took action after the shooting rampages appeared to have already ended, or in some cases both." Yeah. And, in turn, this has its own sort of local angle for me. As I mentioned to you earlier, I went over to meet for lunch with Dr. Bill and Bossman Wayne. Well, while in traffic there, wait a minute, maybe I should tweak this. Yeah, why don't I? Stand by for just a minute. I'll put this, and then you can find it on my Facebook page, and you can find it on my Twitter feed as well. Because this defies reason and rationale. Just one second. Done. I hope. There it is. And it's away. Now that it is, I'll tell you what it is. you can see, well, I mean, this is West Virginia. Tiny little state. You could fit the entire population of the state of West Virginia into one borough of New York City. Although, to be fair, if you did that, we would probably begin to immediately put cars up on blocks in said borough and, oh, stop it, enough with the West Virginia jokes. But Ferg and I were at a stoplight, and in front of us was a white pickup truck, of course, with a Florida license plate. I was careful not to get the guy's license plate number, so there aren't any privacy issues here, I don't think. But it was a Toyota Tacoma white pickup truck with a nice fiberglass bed cover on it. And, you know, I'm used to a whole bunch of different stickers on the rear windows of pickup trucks in this state for the longest time. There was the Dale Earnhardt Calvin peeing on the number of Jeff Gordon NASCAR rear window decal. And then there was the friend of Cole Calvin peeing on the EPA, tree huggers, environmentalists, whatever. Decal. I had never seen this decal, though. It is a representation in silhouette, single color, white, white on white. You know, the truck was white, the decal's white. And it's a representation of an assault rifle, a pistol with a silencer on it, and then three little semi-automatic pistols. And underneath it, the words, gun family. Gun family. I immediately grabbed the phone to take a picture. We were at a stoplight. We weren't moving. And no one was in danger. And I snapped a couple of, to make sure that my hand wasn't shaking. At which point, Ferg looked at me and said, "Dad, do you think this is such a good idea? I mean, if the guy looks back and sees you taking a picture, he's the gun family. He's liable to come back here and shoot us." But the deed was already done. So Ferg then grabbed the phone and said, "Hey, selfie!" and held it up so as to create the credible alibi. "No, we're just taking selfies." Because you got to do that now. Because the gun guy might get mad, get out of his vehicle in the middle of midday Beckley, West Virginia traffic, which it may not sound like much to you, but it is probably the worst traffic anywhere in the state of West Virginia, Beckley, West Virginia. What is one supposed to take away from this? And that is not a rhetorical question. I would appreciate your input on this. Daddy is apparently the assault rifle. I'm assuming that, being slightly smaller, Mama is the pistol with the silencer. I think that's a silencer. And then the three little semi-automatic pistols are the three precious babies in the family. Does this mean that this person has provided handguns to his children, who are still in his family? does this mean that this person, this person's children to whom he has provided handguns, carry him around all the time? I mean, you may have noted that in the story there by Amanda Marcotte. Oh, I get it. Oh, Devin's working overtime this evening. The woman's pistol has a silencer because it is the job of the woe man to remain silent. Jesus. Now, I could be wrong. That may not be a silencer. But that first paragraph from the Mother Jones article from 2012, even as the nation has been flooded with millions of additional firearms and a barrage of recent laws has made it easier than ever for ordinary citizens to carry them in public places, including bars, parks, and schools. Now, there's your next front line in the battle for freedom in America. Why can't a 16-year-old kid carry a handgun to school? No, really, why not? I mean, let's posit a 16-year-old who has had his or her hunter's safety class, has passed a pistol handling class, has never passed a psychological evaluation because they're not required. How long before the NRA says, you know what we need? We don't just need more cops in schools. We need kids who've been trained how to use them to carry guns in school. Because I don't think we're that far off. So, I mean, that kind of, because see, and did I note that this was not a West Virginia plate on this vehicle? It was a Florida tag. You know, from the state where people stand their ground against teenage boys carrying Skittles and a can of tea. And then are acquitted for the murder of said kid with said Skittles and said tea. I don't know about you. Generally speaking, I am not a fearful person. I mean, I managed to make it all the way through. From September 11th, 2001, all the way up to the announced killing of Osama bin Laden, without ever, not even once, being afraid that some 6'6" tall, disaffected Arab radical with a portable dialysis machine was going to render my local Wally World into a heap of smoking rubble. I don't walk around being afraid of things or people. But when I see in ordinary, everyday, day-to-day traffic a guy proudly proclaiming that he has a gunned-up family, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Really? The Florida license plate number is readable?
I've got it.
I had no... Jay letting me know that. Oh, well. Oh, there it is. I must have sent a different one. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's partially readable. Not too bad for him. No right to privacy. I mean, Jesus, he apparently doesn't want to be private about the fact that he's a gunned-up family. This weird, weird person. I had one where it wasn't readable. I guess I used the right. But what does it matter? Because he's proud of his gunned upness. God Almighty. And again, I just offer the observation. That with these lawful gun owners, you never know from one moment to the next when they're going to go from being lawful to awful. You just don't know. So that is just a beginning. That's the filibobster for this evening, the 6th of June, 2014. I will note that we do have Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge on the table, which has thus far gone unresponded to, and we are dealing with a $380 shortfall, and depending on what I find out from Boss Man Wayne, it may actually only be $280. I suspect it is. And if it is only $280, then... Well, goodness me, meeting Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge would get us a long way out of the hole. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge, your 5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes 20, your 20 becomes 40, 40, 80, like that. And hopefully we can take care of the shortfall in fairly short order. We will take a break. We'll fire up Friday on the front porch, I hope, and see where it goes from there. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. couldn't resist. Hall & Oates. Family Man. Kind of, you know, when you're running around with a gun family decal on your Toyota pickup truck, it kind of adds a new nuance to that. If you push me too far, I just might line from that, because that's what I was thinking when I, oh, never mind. This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, the 6th day of June, 2014, and the Friday on the Front Porch gang is assembled. Good evening, one and all. We've got Jay Cruzen, we've got Todd and Kathy. Tracy is sort of with us. Sergi's here, Waggy's here, Sparky, the ever-present, is here, and Jeffrey is also with us from across the Atlantic. Good evening, one and all.
You guys are going to have to carry it for a few minutes. I got to finish something here.
Okay, no worries.
All right.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, good evening, Waggy. How are you?
I've been better, but also been worse.
Yeah, well, you know, ask me again later. It could go either way. Right. I get that. Let's see. How are you doing, Jay Cruzen? We haven't talked in a while.
No, I'm all right. How are you?
Hanging in there. Jeffrey, good evening, or is it good morning yet?
It's good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
It's 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. How do you call it? In the morning.
Yeah, a.m. Yeah.
A.m., yes.
Well, we're awfully glad you could join us this morning. Anybody got any bees under bonnets, burrs under saddles? Anything particular to bring to the table to get us rolling?
Not at the moment.
Okay. And by the way, Jan and Jerry noting hello from the chat room. Yeah, we've got a nice crowd in the chat room this evening, as well as a good crowd in the Friday on the Front Porch discussion. Oh, where can we go? Where can we go? Oh, in the midst of all of this, especially the story about the guy, Dennis Marks, who tried to mount a one-man assault on the Forsyth County Courthouse in Georgia today. Well, it turns out that there was a little bit of news earlier in the week. This is one from the Stack, but worth paying attention to. A little bit of news from earlier in the week that Attorney General Eric Holder, whom all right-wingers despise because he's that attorney general who was appointed by that one in our White House. Attorney General Eric Holder announced this past Tuesday that he's reviving a domestic terrorism task force within the Justice Department. Okay, we've got some background there. Hold off for a minute until that passes. The Domestic Terrorism Task Force, according to NBC News, was, of course, created after Timothy McVeigh bombed the Oklahoma Federal Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City in 1995. And Attorney General Eric Holder announced, as the nature of the threat we face evolves to including the possibility of individual radicalization via the Internet, it is critical that we return our focus to potential extremists here at home. He did note that the attacks at Fort Hood and the Boston Marathon bombings show that homegrown terror is a real possibility. The task force will be comprised of the Justice Department, the FBI, and federal prosecutors in their given districts. And the right wing has already gone nuts about it. You may recall that a report shortly into the beginnings of the first Obama administration, a report was released on domestic terrorism that showed what a risk this country faces from its arguably treasonous right wing, neo-Confederates and the like. Everyone from Rush Limbaugh to Glenn Beck to Michael Savage to Sean Hannity to Bill O'Reilly, yada, 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 the usual suspects, began bloviating and opinionating and screeching and squealing and screaming about how unfair it was that there was a report out there that was noting that right-wingers tend to be gunned up and dangerous and occasionally treasonous. Right? Yeah. So then the report was suppressed. And it was one of the first instances of a right-wing hissy about that Obama and how he's after our freedom. Wolverines! Right? And because right-wingers are eminently clueless, they sort of fail to note that these sorts of reports are not generated on the back of they're not written on the back of the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes envelope, and they aren't created overnight. The clueless right wing, and maybe they were deliberately clueless because, you know, it was released under the administration of that one. They failed to note that the report had been generated at the request of and at the order of the Bush administration. Nonetheless, it was horribly, horribly, horribly unfair, and now they're having a poop hemorrhage all over themselves because we're acknowledging the fact that there is domestic terrorism in the United States. Glory, huh?
Well, of course they're going to lose it because most of the cases we've heard of domestic terrorism, you know, most of the cases have been right-wingers. And, you know, God forbid they acknowledge that they have terrorists on their side of the political spectrum.
Well, absolutely, Sergi. And the thing that brought this to mind was the Dennis Marks thing in Georgia today. I mean, there it was for everybody to see. What do you call one of these sovereign citizens who, my God, he booby-trapped his house 10 days before he left so that any cops going in might be blown to smithereens? But I'm sure that if you asked any right-winger out there, one of those goobers over at that website that rhymes with light fart, for instance, I'm sure they would tell you, no, that guy was clearly a communist.
Well, and something kind of ironic here, too, is that I've been noticing, as I've been watching TV, and there's been some commercials for, I believe it's been the U.S. Navy. And they've been going through, and the pledge that they take, and I apologize if I don't use the proper terms for this for anybody who has served, but they go through and it's a cut of one soldier or a seaman, a cut of another military person. And it's, we promise to uphold the Constitution and to protect our country against all threats. And then it cuts. And it seems to me, I recall that phrase continuing on of against all threats, foreign and domestic. And they leave that part out. And I thought that was, curiously left out. With all the gun nuts, with all the terrorism, the shootings, the whole bit that was going on, that the military left that out.
Well, do you think it's not there anymore? I mean,
oh, I think it's there. I just think they left it out of the commercial.
Oh, okay. It, selected What, so as not to raise the ire of the Freedom Protector Woods out there?
Right, and for any, you know, prospective people kind of that might be thinking about joining, you know, to raise any questions about, oh, this may have to turn, you know, we might have to turn on U.S. citizens, you know, and you know, raise that question and then say, ah, no, I don't want to join, you know, because of that, you know, so I think it was left out on purpose, you know, for that reason and probably others.
Yeah, more than likely. Well, and you know, you've got that, now you've got that group of, are you familiar with them, Todd? The Oath Keepers? These are military personnel who have sworn that they will never fire on American citizens. And you might just look at that on its face and say, well, that seems like a reasonable position. But no, they're deeply right-wing oriented, and it's based in this notion that somehow or another that one's going to take away our freedom. And in point of fact, Dave Nywert, who I consider to be a personal friend, and who has written at such places as Slate and Crooks and Liars, and now writes the Hate Watch blog for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and has done, he wrote a book called The Eliminationists that was absolutely brilliant. And I think I probably need to get Dave back on the program at some point here just to talk about the expansion of this stuff. With the Attorney General's announcement that the Domestic Terrorism Task Force was being reinvigorated, well, Dave didn't have to wait long in putting together his report, because he knew that predictably the right wing would go out of its itsy bitsy teeny weeny lizard brained minds. Let's see, Alex Jones, right?
Right.
Yeah, Alex Jones says, in reality, Holder's task force will undoubtedly focus on the Obama administration's political enemies, mainly returning military veterans, conservatives, and those who identify with the Tea Party. Such groups have been increasingly linked to terrorism by multiple federal agencies. Given the documented history of the federal government's involvement in facilitating terrorism, the administration will likely do whatever it can to create the necessary scenario to bolster its executive power. So it's a fall. Yes, Maggie.
How did you do that without absolutely ripping your throat to pieces? I'm impressed.
It hurts. But it's because I am, in fact, a professional broadcaster. Do not try that at home.
Okay.
But this is
professional broadcaster on closed course?
Yes. On closed course. Absolutely.
Bob, frankly, I'm still wondering how you do the Wolverines. You get that reverb going.
Oh, that's purely technological magic. I didn't have a reverb button when I was in D.C., so Wolverines was much more boring. But it's a lot more fun when you've got a little knob you can turn.
Okay, yeah, to echo your voice and make it sound like you're screaming off a cliff.
Yeah, it's also handy for the voice of God when that is called for. Yeah. No, I love the Alex Jones take on this, because it's a false flag before the flag has even been run up. At this point in time, according to Alex Jones, all right-wing domestic terrorism is made up. Aren't they charming?
Well, yeah. I guess it comes from your point of view. And if you're coming from the primordial ooze and looking up, that's your point of view. And so, you know, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like
a nail. Yeah, sure.
You know, but once you get into the sunlight and become enlightened and exercise a few brain cells, I think maybe reasonable people would take a different view of that.
Well, here, Dave and I were, his collection of weirdism, well, it gets weirder. I mean, Alex Jones was almost wonkish in what they said at his website. But then there's, and I've never heard of these folks, and I'm kind of afraid to go to the website, so I won't. Then there's the Daily Slave. Yeah, really.
Spell the last one.
Slave, S-L-A-V-E, the Daily Slave.
Ooh. Okay.
And they went right after Eric Holder. And I've got, and make no mistake, I've got issues and serious ones with Eric Holder. Going back to when he made it possible for the board of directors of Chiquita Banana to escape any criminal culpability for participating in and approving of murder for hire. I mean, there's no question there. They really, really did. And he was defending them, and he wasn't attorney general then. He was outside of the Department of Justice. He was a big wheel, hot shot defense lawyer in D.C. during the Bush administration. And, yeah, he worked that deal. And the Bush administration said, what? Hey, that's a great idea. So, no, I mean, this is not the Eric Holder fan club. But the Daily Slave, wow. Holder only, because for this one, you kind of got to work the General Jack D. Ripper voice from Dr. Strangelove. Holder only obtained his job because of his black skin and his support of government-financed terrorism. He's been accused of direct involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing back in the mid-1990s through his role in the Clinton regime. Simply put, this clown is an evil lawyer terrorist who should be tried for high crimes and treason. His announcement of a task force to stop homegrown terrorists is a joke when he himself is a terrorist criminal. This savage should be rotting in a prison cell. Wow, huh? Measured response from the right wing.
Well, it does kind of make you think.
It makes me think that they need to be shot in the neck at a distance with a Thorazine dart. I mean,
right, yeah. I mean, you know, you can go through and cherry pick various parts out of that and probably agree with some of it, but my, speechless. Okay, I give up. Speechless.
No, I understand. Then Dave Nywert found a quote over at the Daily Dose, which declared that the Obama administration exhibits behavior consistent with that of despotic tyrants. One of the chief offenders, Eric Holder, has just announced that he is coming after everyday American patriots, especially those who use the Internet. You got that? Domestic terrorists are patriots now. And folks who do domestic terrorism are just everyday Americans. I mean, do we begin to see the extent to which treason resides in the hearts of the right wing in this country? That's about it. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Woo-hoo. If I'm the last dodo, don't you, no. Yeah. See that, and because I guess, and now there's another story out there, and I had it in the stacks earlier this week, and this is probably an appropriate time to mention it. There was a story that broke out of California earlier this week about a guy in San Francisco being taken down, wanted on some sort of domestic terrorism charges and allegations that he was building bombs or something. And in a complete break from current patterns, the guy was a former Democratic political consultant who had apparently gone off the deep end. Now, I haven't seen it begin to blow up yet, but, you know, these right-wingers are not exactly the sharpest knives in the drawer. Look for that guy to be pointed to as proof that both sides do it.
Oh, of course. They'll always find somebody to make that statement. Even if there isn't anybody, they'll always make that statement.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let's see. Lots of number of comments rolling in. Bomb Trains on Twitter, whom I follow and follows me back, has apparently seen, which is not inspiring, has seen the gun family decal on a car in Spokane, Washington. So this the Toyota pickup truck was from Florida. That's the entire diagonal of the country. I got a feeling these things are going to be proliferating like mushrooms after a spring rain. Haley on Facebook noted I fully expect these stickers to start showing up in my neck of the woods soon. Hey, Haley, I'll bet they're already there. And then our buddy Dennis, with whom I mow grass in Kentucky, noted, you know, that's why cops wear uniforms. So you can tell that they're good guys with guns. Or at least you hope they're good guys. Because I've got this story out of California from earlier in the week, from the Department of Oh Dear. According to KNTV, San Mateo County Sheriff's deputies responded to a 911 call from a family that was having problems with one of its family members, an 18-year-old girl. They called 911 in the hopes that paramedics would arrive and render medical assistance because the 18-year-old special needs daughter and sister of an individual by the name of Tiny Serrano. The 18-year-old girl was Yanira Serrano. She had special needs, and she had not been taking her medication for some time. And she had become erratic. And she may have had a knife. And so they called for paramedics to come and assist them in dealing with her. Instead, the San Mateo, California County Sheriff showed up and blew her brains out. That's what makes that whole good guys with a gun thing so occasionally difficult. According to Deputy Rebecca Rosenblatt, she said, deputies arrived on scene. Shortly thereafter, there was a confrontation where the deputy was in fear for his life, and as a result, he fired his weapon.
Of an 18-year-old girl?
Yes. With special needs.
Nuts. Absolutely.
It's another one that just leaves you speechless.
I mean, now
yeah, but chime in if you're surprised.
Right. But I mean, here we have the hero up at the college in Seattle last night, who pepper sprayed a gunman and saved God knows how many lives. And you know, your average sheriff's deputy, you ever noticed? They got more than a gun on that belt that they wear. There's pepper spray. There's a taser. And this guy goes, nah, no pepper spray, no taser. Bang. You know, it's like I don't know. It's like that scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, the guy's standing there with the swords and flashing the sabers, and Indiana Jones just pulls out his peacemaker and bang! Only that's a movie, and this is reality. And this is a girl who was 18 years old with special needs.
Yeah, believe it or not, though, if she's got a knife, he's dead within his rights, but you got to question judgment. So, he still ought to be facing something. That's poor-ass judgment, like you say. There's a taser, there's pepper spray, there's a club, a girl with a knife. Why you got to shoot her? You can, but why?
Right, and this is, you know, this is a big, burly, trained cop, and an 18-year-old special needs person, female, with a knife, and you got to blow her away. By way of follow up, the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office put the deputy on administrative leave with pay, of course, while detectives in the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office complete an investigation that will clear him of all wrongdoing.
Wait, administrative leave with pay. So that's a vacation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Paid vacation.
Just checking.
Yeah. So, you know what? This is getting to be rather a difficult country, isn't it?
Well, you know, I don't recall what state it was in, but there was a camper that was camping illegally. I believe it was in a state park, and they had three highway patrolmen, sheriffs, may have been sheriffs, that went up and tried to remove him from where he was at. And the guy had ultimately a small knife. He was trying to avoid confrontation with these sheriffs, and I don't know, the sheriffs were 20 feet away, 25 feet away, maybe more. And the first line of defense was shoot him in the back. You know, no taser, no, you know, bean bags, nothing non-lethal. It was shoot him, and not just that, shoot him in the back. And you take a look at what's going on up at, I believe it was UC Davis with the pepper spray when
right.
They were protesting. And, it's becoming very militaristic and, it used to be that the community had a relationship with the peace officers, and that seems to be deteriorating like everything else is, going around anymore. The divisions, the dividing lines are becoming more and more clear, more distinct. It's either if you're not for us, you're against us. There seems to be no middle ground. You got really, really good cops, and then you've got the really bad ones. And the really bad, I think the difference between the really bad ones and the people sitting in prison is the fact that the cops have the badge and they're allowed to do it. Now, that's a subset. I'm not by any means painting all law enforcement officials like that. There are very, very good ones. I saw a YouTube video last night of a policeman stopping traffic so a family of ducks could cross a six-lane highway. Thumbs up on that. But,
yeah, sure.
You know, it seems like those people are becoming, you know, rarer and rarer, and those are the people that really deserve to wear that uniform.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna steal something here from one of my favorite movies. You have to forgive me for that. But you got three different types of people who joined the police force. Now, this was originally said about the military. You got those people who just need a job. You got those people who really want to make a difference and help. And then you got those people who want a legal means of killing somebody. And that's what you're dealing with. And when you look at every police department, you got those three right there. And that latter one, that third, are the ones that keep blowing people away.
Well, and you couple that Jay Cruzan with the fact that these are largely low paid jobs, and that only people who want the power more than the money are prone to taking it, and then add in the fact, I mean, Can anybody, and I realize this might seem somewhat superficial, and okay. Can anybody explain to me why it is that it seems like all cops are now skinheads?
I don't know. I guess because the culture is so.
I don't mean they're ideologically skinheads. I mean.
You mean bald headed?
Yeah, they're all shaved. Yeah, they're all shaven headed.
A lot of them are straight out of the military, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought maybe it might have something to do with the fact that if they get into some sort of altercation, it keeps people from being able to pull their hair. Because that would be kind of reasonable.
Well, maybe because the style for many, many years, I don't know if the style has changed since maybe Henry Rollins and that whole group. But, you know, having a bald head was stylish for many, many years.
I knew a lot of guys in construction that did it, especially during the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one of my friends here that does it. He gives me a bad time because my hair is getting so long.
Are you a DFH, Sparky?
A duck doofus wannabe? What?
No, a DFH, a dirty effing hippie.
Oh, I was one of those when I was in the Air Force. Always been one. Now I can do it. I can be one. I don't have to work in public anymore.
Yeah.
Plus, people don't bother you in the stores and everything. The only people that bother me in the store are other veterans that want to see my hat that I wear.
Okay, everybody else is way too quiet.
Well, I was trying to find a piece I saw on Now with Alex. What's her name? Alex Wagner? On the State of Jefferson thing.
Oh, yeah.
The day of the vote. My county was the only county to approve it out of the three that had it on the ballot.
Oh, well.
The original county where it all started, they voted against it.
Against what?
Oh, secession from the state of California.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
I had to go into town on election day, and there's this little mini kind of small, it's a Cowtown motif deal. It was originally called Old Cowtown Plaza because it's right across from the fairgrounds where they have the rodeo. And there's a flagpole out on front. And election day, they put American flags all over town. Well, this guy put a double X State of Jefferson flag right underneath the American flag instead of where the state flag should go.
A what? A who? Kind of flag, Duck?
State of Jefferson.
State of Jefferson double X flag.
You mean a Confederate flag?
No, it's a different flag. You can look it up online. You just put in images, State of Jefferson.
I don't think my computer will allow me to do that.
Oh, well, maybe later.
I'm just kidding.
You can look it up later, but these guys, Alexander Pelosi did this. I just caught the tail end of it. She went to a Civil War Day reenactment in Siskiyou County. So these guys are in a near a pine tree grove in an open meadow, and they're doing a battle scene, and they got all the kids out there and everything. And one person had a Confederate flag banner hung from a tree, but they were doing their little war games, and they were talking to her about how they
Wait, what? War games, huh?
Well, they're Civil War reenactment.
I don't care how many times they reenacted, they lost. Sorry.
That's true.
Amen.
Well,
Let us fucking go already.
The Union guys had horses, and the Confederate guys just were attacking, you know, a charge, but no horses at all.
Figures.
And they had the one cannon to blow up with. But I was trying to find a video online so I could share it, and I can't find it anywhere.
Wasn't that for MSNBC, Spark?
Yes, it was. I caught it on the tail end of Now with Alex Wagner.
Right. I didn't see it, but I heard it was coming on, and then I had to do something else.
No, it's just before.
Are you up in the area, Sparky?
Yeah, he lives in. Yeah. Sparky lives in the heart of secessionism Jefferson in California.
Oh, my God.
We're the only county now that broke to succeed.
Yours did?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
I think it won 54% of the vote.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, Father, my Lord Jesus, help my soul.
Tracy, that's what I would like to do right now, Tracy.
But we
can talk later. In any case, I hope everyone's doing well, and all that. Okay. I hope everyone's doing. Yeah.
I think my ear just started bleeding.
Well, I gotta have some follow up here, Sparky. Are the winners of the referendum there in your county all flush with freedom and out yelling Wolverines in the streets, or you know, are they gonna be we'll be back, or what?
They'll go to the next county supervisors meeting, you know. Do some kind of declaration or something. I don't know how else to proceed.
Well, do y'all have a federal installation they could shoot at? I mean, maybe go obviously you don't have a coastline, do you?
No, but we have a national park.
Well, I was trying to find a sort of Fort Sumter substitute.
Oh.
So, yeah. You know,
they're allowed to carry in the national parks, right?
Right, thanks to that gun-grabbing Obama.
Yep, because, you know, he wants all the guns to go away.
They can go up there in Alaska National Park and shoot the kamikaze chipmunks.
you know, folks, this is the first election in California. We had it on Tuesday. And I just went into the polls, and I was like on autopilot, and I just voted straight down the Democratic ticket, even though I might have wanted to vote for Cindy Sheehan for governor or vote for Laura Wells for Peace and Freedom. I got it mixed up. But in any case, I just voted for the Democrats straight on down the line.
But it was just a primary, though, right, Larry?
Yeah.
But our primaries are different, though.
Yeah. Open
primary.
Yeah, we have a crazy system now that I don't understand.
Well, the top two vote getters do.
Yeah, Sandra was pointing out, what was it, last night, that there may be some unsavory outcomes from the squirrely California primary system.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a teabagger running against a regular Republican and a general and a Democrat could be eliminated, but usually it goes party lines.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
And the Republican Party is fading in California, except up here.
But, you know, that's no guarantee of a good outcome, Sparky, because, well, what happens, you know, for a very long time, a Republican didn't have a chance of getting elected so much as the rat catcher in this state. So the primary, for all intents and purposes, decided the election. But what that meant was that the people who were Republicans ran as Democrats, and the people who were Democrats ran as Democrats. And you can have that, kind of a crossover effect. You could very easily have that sort of crossover effect in California with the passage of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't. Here where I live, we haven't had a Democratic representative since before Ronald Reagan.
Really? You've been represent you've had a Republican in Congress for that long?
Oh yeah. We had Wally Herger for 24 years, and now we got Doug LaMalfa.
Yeah. Bob, how it works generally in California is the northern left coast down to San Francisco is very liberal Democrat but rural. And then the San Francisco Bay Area is all Democrat, most of it. And then Los Angeles, the inner cities and some of the suburbs are Democratic. And then the eastern Los Angeles suburbs and Orange County and San Diego and Riverside County and San Bernardino County and the other rural counties are usually Republican. I don't know if I'm being accurate,
that's how you wind up with Daryl Issa. And
in Orange County, yes. And San Diego, in Orange County.
Asa says I get the toaster for a kamikaze chipmunk.
I tend to agree.
Maybe I should explain it. As you're driving through Lassen Park, because you can drive quite a ways, you increase in elevation, because the road is like 8,000 foot at the summit. And as you go up towards the summit and you're driving up there, they're called golden-crested chipmunks. They just go flying across the road. And you don't want to swerve to miss them because the road is kind of scary in spots. So you just keep driving, and sometimes you hit them. But why they do it, I don't know. There must have been the last time we went through there, 20 or 30 of them that ran out in front of me. That's where I came up with the kamikaze chipmunk idea.
Well, he's got a little stamp on the side of his car that every time he hits one, he goes out and just makes a mark on it, like the old fighter jets.
Yeah, well, Sparky, isn't it the little silhouette of Chip and Dale?
Oh, it could be.
That'd work.
But to make amends, I have 3 gray squirrels that took over the redwood trees here. So they've been on the lawn all afternoon, running around being crazy.
Okay, so how's everybody's weekend going so far?
Mine hasn't started yet. I'm still on the clock, Tracy.
Oh, that's true. Well, as am I. It's my airport day, and it is the beginning of Gay Pride weekend here in L.A., so I will be pretty much working all weekend. Oh, I got my tooth fixed.
Oh, yeah?
The smile is back.
Yay!
Yay! I don't look like Peg Leg Pete by the mouth now. All snaggletooth and shit. And I look like a girl again. It was terrible. I love my dentist. I told him, I said, I'm gonna come back. You don't have to keep doing stuff so the temporaries won't last. You know, if you want to see me, just call. We'll have lunch, whatever. You know. But other than that, So remember yesterday when I was talking about the jack off that was getting all pissy with me because I wouldn't change how I felt about gun rights.
Right.
He felt it his duty to enlighten me because obviously I'm an idiot, you know, because he's he studied philosophy and, you know, all that. And yeah, whatever. Kiss my black ass.
Yeah,
so anyway, right before that tirade started, there was another note further up on my on my Facebook page by one of my friends. I don't even remember meeting this woman, but, you know, we go back and forth and talk to each other every so often, and she's definitely a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But she wrote something on my page that, especially after the day that I had, just absolutely floored me. Let me see. I mean, it was a good thing. It wasn't anything terrible. It really knocked me off my feet. Let's see. She wrote, let's see. Basically, she wrote that just by listening, I mean, and watching the stuff that I put on my Facebook page, it has totally changed her mind about the way she thinks. And that made me just, it really made my day on Wednesday. Because, as you guys know, I had a hellish day and all that, but she wrote that to me. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because we've had stuff, talked about Obamacare and all sorts of stuff. And she's like, you know, she took the time to read what I wrote. And it wasn't, you know, she didn't do the typical Republican right-wingy thing that they do and say, well, this is not going to work and pinch, you know, and all this. But it made me feel good. And, of course, I can't find it because I have so much shit on my page. But anyway, mm-hmm. that just made me smile so much because she, you know, we would have discussions about gun violence and all that. But she basically said, if, you know, that when people say that they're too old to change and whatnot and so forth, that's bullshit. They're just lazy. Something like that. I forget how she said it, but it was just nice. So it works. So basically what we're, you know, some of the things that I talk about, actually, people are listening.
And that's a little, that's more than a little bit inspiring.
It's more than a little bit inspiring. More than a little bit inspiring. Other than my stalker, got real mad because, you know, I think people are stupid that want to, you know, be armed to the teeth and go into Chili's and Chipotle because, you know, freedom. And, you know, why not? I just, again, don't get it. I don't get it. I do not get why people feel, again, because the average asshole, if you're stupid enough to carry, think that you need to bring a AK-47 or whatever into a Chipotle, I don't want that same person deciding whether or not the black guy that walks into the Chipotle is a bad guy. Just because he's, you know, well, he's a black guy, so obviously what?
Dangerous.
He's dangerous.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's how they think. That's how, you know, Trayvon Martin was murdered, and the other young man in Florida was murdered because they're black, so it's obviously they're dangerous. Come on, player. Don't you know?
But there are places in this country where there's some enlightenment and where people and where people actually do, you know, they're able to communicate not only verbally but also soulfully, in the sense that they don't have those kinds of separations in there. They don't have, I mean, you know where I'm going, Tracy. You know, where people can understand and you know, empathize.
Where are these places, sweetheart? Where are these places? Because as long as we have the right-wing media and the people think it, you know, I mean, this has been going on in this country since this country. I, as Bob has said, pointed out many and many a time, first you make the person that you're trying to make terrible, make dehumanize them. And it is okay to shoot them. It is okay to think they're savages or animals or thugs or, you know, less than. I mean, like I said, the person that I was, that was, you know, going off on me, he lives here in L.A., the land of, you know, La La Land. There's nowhere in this country where it doesn't exist. I wish there were.
But but have you ever lived in San Francisco or Oakland or?
I've lived in San Francisco. I lived there for 2 years. Lived there for 2 years. Like I said, I mean, there are places, yes, where it's least likely that stuff like this may happen. But again, like I said, I have been called nigga more times the last 2 years that I have in my 48 years of being on this earth. And every instance was here in L.A. Not one time, as many times as I have been down south since Obama was president was elected, have I been called that.
Damn, that sounds that sounds like the South, man, or Tracy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's South California.
Southern California. South California. That's what I'm saying. I have, again, and baby, I know, and I'm not trying to be mean, but you're coming from the thing of privilege. And not saying that you are privileged, but you will never, ever, ever understand, even though you have a disability, and I don't say it even though as what have you, you're still in a rung higher than I will ever be, ever, in this society, ever, ever, ever.
Even if I'm not in a place where I can go to work and earn money and do all that other kind of stuff?
Yes! Honey, you're a white guy. Even if you are Jewish or what have you, you're still white. You still have white features or what have you.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
She's talking, Larry, about white privilege. And white male privilege, yeah. Into the bargain.
White male privilege. Like I said, I'm black, I'm a woman, and I'm gay. And I have a disability on top of that. And I don't look at these things as disadvantages at all. No, I do not.
Well,
the society may want me to think that way, and for a better part of my life, I used to think that way.
Well, do you remember a few minutes ago when I mentioned getting the tweet from Bomb Trains saying that he had seen the gun family decal on a vehicle out in Spokane?
Right.
Well, I got it. Okay.
Put
so
that on my car and see what happens.
Yeah, no kidding. So when I saw Spokane, I thought Spokane. What is it? Here's another story, and once again, it is not Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, et cetera, South Carolina. It's Spokane, Washington.
In the West Coast.
Where there is apparently a neighborhood dispute, neighborhood feud, spat, whatever going on, somewhere in a neighborhood in Spokane. And a woman is not getting along with her neighbors. And the woman who's not getting along has been putting signs in her window accusing her neighbors of being hillbillies.
Ew.
Hillbillies. And then she draws another picture of her hand holding her middle finger upraised, you know, in that gesture. And so they said, at some point in time, they said, no, we're not, said to the woman, and why, I don't know, we're not hillbillies. The woman putting the signs in the windows says that she's doing it because her neighbors are messy. And their yard is messy, and they've reportedly regularly reported her dog to the police. Now, bear in mind the woman with the signs being directed at her family, her children are Cambodian, half Cambodian.
Uh oh.
So when the woman's husband approached the sign displaying lady and said, no, our family are not hillbillies. We're rednecks. The woman put a sign in her window saying, no, you, letter U, R, letter R, niggers.
Huh?
Oh.
Damn.
Wow.
Wait a minute, I didn't even hear what that... Anyway, never mind.
So she went from hillbillies to niggers?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you're considered a hillbilly, you're considered, well, okay.
Hey Bob.
Yeah, from it's just an escalation of slurs. Yes.
Well, people think that way. How are we ever going to get beyond all this separation of this?
I don't know if this country can, Larry, ever. I don't know if this country ever can, because race and bigotry and prejudice are, you could almost say, and this is a dangerous thing to say, hardwired into the sociological genetics of this country.
I don't believe that.
I gotta side with Jay Cruzen on that.
I mean, from the moment white Europeans landed in this country, there has been some level of racial demographic. That's not the right word either, but some level of bigotry and prejudice and hate. Whether it was, right off the bat, it was the abuse of the indigenous peoples of this country.
Yes.
And fast on the heels of that came the slave trade.
But y'all getting older and y'all dying off, and the younger the people are, the less that bull crap they have.
Who's dying? Wait, what?
Yeah, who's
dying? The more bigoted people.
Right, and as the younger people come up, the skin color is becoming more of an even brown. The races are no longer staying nearly as segregated as what they were a generation or two generations ago.
Anybody,
I
know.
The person who is black is a greater pool because of the interracial mixing, which is good. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, I know most people in this conversation know enough mathematics to know what happens when you divide fractions. You know, a half divided by half becomes a fourth.
A quarter.
An eighth and a sixteenth. But the thing is, at no point do you ever reach zero.
Nope.
And I think that probably applies to this country. You're never going to get to a non-racist, a completely non-racist society. Understanding, of course, at the same time, that race exists on a number of separate continuums. There's individual, there's institutional, there's overt, covert. But it's gonna be there. I mean, for instance, a lot of us, whether it means that we were the Pollyanna-ish idealists or not, a lot of us thought maybe we'd gotten past some of this stuff. And then with the election of Barack Obama and his inauguration in January 2009, we found out that it was anything but gone. I mean, it went crazy.
Yeah.
But Bob, all that did was turn the light on in the room, and you could see who you're dealing with.
Didn't scatter; they came out.
And also, Bob, you remember? You know, though, this is an opinion. This is not a. We elected Reagan in 1980, and Reagan set the tone after Carter for all these stuff to happen. And we're suffering the effects of the Reaganomics and the extreme right wing tilt of the country and the contraction of the economic system And instead of going in the direction of Keynesian economics, we've gone in the direction of the free market economics. And that's, and people, you know, and for some reason now, right-wingism, or maybe I haven't noticed, but right-wingism in terms of popular culture and everything is sexy. And I don't get it, but, you know, and the whole country has been, like my father said, the country is Republican. The country is Republican.
No, it's not. This is a center-left country.
Okay, I back up a little
bit. Sorry, Duncan.
Well, hey, before you do, Sparky, just one thing to point out for those of us interested in the geography of it. Asa just pointed out that where Spokane is concerned, Asa says, Spokane is the right-wing goober central of Washington State, Repiglican Central. It's way out in the eastern boondocks of Washington State, and it's home of the God wants you to be rich, just get over it radio host.
Been to Spokane, been to Idaho, too.
Spokane is where the Native American reservation where Sherman Alexie is from, right? Is that the Wellpinit or the Wellpinit or however you say it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Just one little other update, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to just run over you, Sparky. But $5 of your $100 pull the pin challenge has been met, and thank you very much to Thomas for doing that. He said the pin has been tugged.
Oh, okay. And then there's that other thing that I sent you that you can raffle off as a surprise gift if somebody matches.
Yes.
After you watched it.
Well, yeah, I'm a little spoiled on that in that regard. Kind of hung up on that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you were talking about window stickers. For the longest time when I moved back to here, I started seeing all these cars around and trucks around the town that had GWG in the back window. Well, it turns out, and then I finally figured out, I saw one and said Girls with Guns. So that website I put up there, I thought I'd ask you to look at that. I posted it in the chat room, and I got it here in Skype chat, too. And I just thought it was funny. I mean...
Oh, I see it here now.
Yeah, because when you see that's a female gun that resides in that vehicle. Or it just likes the clothing. I don't know what it is.
There's a good one going around down here in South Florida, because South Florida, all these people go around, they've got these stickers that says salt life, you know, like saltwater fishing, saltwater this, everything else, you know. Mm-hmm. It's salt life, and they have a little picture or whatever. So now there's a sticker that's showing up all over the place. It says A Salt Life, and it's the picture of an AR-15.
Oh, nice. Well, again, I note, Jay Cruzen, that the vehicle I saw today with the gun family decal in it had a Florida plate.
Well, I'm surprised it didn't also have a sticker that said Assault Life, and it probably will soon.
It may have. I was just absolutely dumbstruck by the gun family.
Oh, can we design one that says not a gun family?
Yeah, probably.
Just saying.
In this state, I would not put it on my vehicle.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
I'm gonna add that.
You know, because some gunned up idiot would come up to you in the Wally World parking lot and say, "What's the matter with you? Don't you love America? You know, Second Amendment meant to protect freedom."
Yeah, and my freedom is to stick my sticker on my car.
And then they shoot you.
Freedom to have yours.
And then they shoot you. Because the distance between lawful gun owner and awful gun owner is the distance it takes to move the trigger sufficiently to make the pin hit the shell.
Yeah.
Bob, we've been joined by the Angry Indian.
Hey, Angry.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Angry, it's Larry. I listen to your show.
Oh, thank you.
I listen to your show every time it comes on, okay? All right.
Oh, by the way, before we go any further, I need to let Tracy know she got some fan mail. This from Danny. Please tell Tracy congrats on her impending wedding. I'm excited for her. Odd as it is, I'm a licensed wedding officiant, but can't marry my husband of a decade. Also glad to hear her Republican friend has seen the light thanks to her. In my late 30s, I met a group of young guys in their late 20s, and they told me, like her, knowing me helped change their views, get rid of the stereotypes, and make them better people. To this day, I'm so grateful the universe sent this large group of straight men into my life that are my dearest friends to this day, and now they're sweet kids, too. We can indeed change this world if only one or four people at a time. Nice. Thanks, Danny. Okay, don't everybody jump in at the same time.
Now, I heard some discussion about racism, so I wanted to see what was going on.
Yeah, jump in, Angry.
You know, I mean, where is everybody? Is everyone on the same page with this or not? Because it doesn't seem like it. There seems to be a lot of confusion as to what the sister was talking about.
I don't think I'm confused.
Well, Angry, Tracy was on, and I was talking about there are places in the Bay Area here where people, get along and don't make these kinds of distinctions and all that. And she was saying, but Larry, you have to understand something. You're coming from a place of white privilege. Just because you're Jewish and you're in a wheelchair and you don't go out and work doesn't mean that you don't have the white privilege. That's what she was saying.
And I have to agree with her. Do you understand why she... Well, first off, there's why she was saying that, and then there's the objective reality of why she said that. The objective reality of that is, if people perceive you as being white, whatever that's supposed to mean, because that is an arbitrary thing, all right? You know, it was to separate those who were being abused from those who were supposed to take advantage of those who were doing the abusing. And, for all accounts and purposes, that's how you would be regarded. Now, you know, being disabled, yeah, there are people who are going to have, you know, specific that they need to be educated, but there are specific prejudices about that. But the thing about it is that, I mean, while there may be certain economic factors in limiting disabled people from things, really what it comes down to is disabled people make folks nervous. When we see people in a walker, when we see someone who needs assistance, when we see people who have special needs, it makes people who believe or like to believe anyway that they're physically normal, it makes them feel nervous. You know, as people who are, you know, really uncomfortable with the disabled and they have a lot of things to say, you know, they feel nervous about it. It's the same thing with a lot of straight men and straight women, whatever straight is supposed to be, who are not comfortable with homosexuals, transsexuals, drag queens, whatever the hell. We have to ask ourselves why we're uncomfortable. When it comes to dealing with racism, you know, racism is just that. Racism. We're talking about the system. We're not talking about attitudes. You know, I mean, social bias, prejudices, yes, they exist. And there will be certain prejudices against you for being white from a particular part of the country. I mean, where Bob's from, there's a lot of assumptions made about West Virginia. Now, I mean, Bob is literate. Bob has a college education, but these are not things that people normally assume. And then, you know, we can talk about hee-haw because if you have a certain age group, that's, it has some relevance. But, you know, it was, you know, basically showing, you know, this particular community the way they saw themselves. At least that's the way I perceived it because I'm not from there. I'm from the projects.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, white people, it's like I as a male. I mean, Bob, you've been conscious of the yes, all women tag on.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I mean, I've been having some serious discussions with other men and myself on how, you know, I myself do not really all the time perceive how my my privileges as a male, even though I'm a male of color, I'm still male. I have more social privilege and more rights than most women.
Yeah, privilege is a continuum. And I guess the greatest aggregation of privilege would be up there where it's white, male, American, fully abled, and everything that everybody else isn't. And if you're that, you've got and of all the people to define this oddly enough, Louis C.K., the comedian,
mm-hmm.
absolutely defined privilege.
Isn't he Mexican?
Well, yeah, and Jewish too, maybe. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he defined it, and he defined himself as being a bearer of white privilege. And he goes through this litany, and it's from a comedy special he did maybe 5-6 years ago. And he goes through this list of "I will never be," ... and just there's a litany of stuff that doesn't happen to you if you are a bearer of white male privilege.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that you particularly think about. And in his case, I believe he has reddish hair and he's pretty fair of skin. So, it's not that he doesn't get hassled. He gets the prejudices that go along with that. If someone assumes that he's Irish because he fits the particular physical stereotype that people have of the Irish in North America, and if he's walking out of a bar, someone might say to themselves, even if they never say it out loud, "Oh, yeah, here's another Irish drunk who just stumbled out of some pub." These things happen, but at the same time, that prejudice might make that person uncomfortable at work. It might make things difficult with a particular employer, maybe, who has a prejudice against the Irish, or maybe has a prejudice against, alcoholism, and assumes that because this person is Irish, well, this person is going to be a drinker, so I'm not going to hire them. Not to say that these things don't happen, but they're not liable to happen. They're not liable to happen. I mean, someone from Appalachia, if people know that they're from Appalachia, sure, there's going to be certain prejudices against them. But if they're standing next to a Spanish-speaking Indian, or they're standing next to a black man, even though he has a PhD, he's wearing baggy clothes and what have you, and he's got headphones on, and they're both waiting in line to pick up the application form. They're not even going for the interview, just the application form. The person who's handing out the forms behind the desk, they come to work with their particular perspectives. And if they feel that because they hear a southern accent, and particularly someone from West Virginia, from Appalachia, they say, "Yeah, well, here's a dumb hick, and he probably won't even be able to fill out the form. Here's the next cat. Here's what I have to think about him. Here's the next person. Here's what I have to think about him or her." These things happen. But we have to be honest about ourselves and where these prejudices actually affect our lives and where they affect us socially. And we have to be honest about how socially these things affect everybody economically, politically, such and so on. And you mentioned earlier this thing with Bergdahl. I don't think that's something that should be left out in terms of trying to bring an analysis. He was a model of everything that America was about until he got back here under the Obama administration.
Yeah,
so now
yeah, that's the whole that's
prejudice
the,
that came up, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say that's the whole thing. Had this been had this all happened during the reign of George W. Bush, the reign of error, there would have been parades, and they would not have had to cancel his welcome home in Idaho because a bunch of goobers from Lubbock, Texas, were going to come up and bring guns.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm black, and I lived in Idaho for a little bit, and I'm going to be honest with you. There were a handful of people that were not happy to see me there. I was with a tall, blonde German woman. No, they were not happy to see me there. But, no one really bothered me. And in turn, I ended up finding a lot of good people in Idaho that really went out of their way to say to me, "You're welcome here. This is America. This is what my husband fought for," what have you. There's a lot of vets in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to cancel this event, because really, a handful of, real nutcases have decided to make an issue out of this. They've brought up every prejudice that I've ever heard against Vietnam vets in the 70s when I was young.
Well, but back up for a minute, Angry. Okay, I'm not calling you out or anything, But you just referred to these people as nutcases.
Mm-hmm.
And look, hey, you've just offered up proof in a way of where privilege will take us. I am not willing to afford or accord these hate-filled monstrosities, these misanthropes who ruined the man's return home in Idaho. I'm not willing to accord them the status of excusing them by virtue of having some sort of different ability or defective mentation. Okay?
I stand corrected. I stand corrected. You're right, because they know what they're doing. They're fully conscious adult, you know, people. They know,
it
they
is
know
mean.
Exactly
it's hate-filled. Look, it was a few days ago in the evolution of the Bergdahl smear that somebody over on Fox News Radio TV Rwanda declared that it was, maybe it was Keith Abloh, I'm not sure, but it was one of those goobs who declared that you could tell there was something wrong with Bo Bergdahl because he had once studied ballet.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I mean, so why not go ahead and, I mean, just go ahead and do it, because we all know what that means, okay? I know the LGBTQ community knows what that means. That's code. That's more mm-hmm. code. And that is a gender slur. That is accusing him of being homosexual.
Which means he's not really a man, which means he's a punk, which means we should, that's why he walked away, which means why we shouldn't have gotten him back. Yeah.
People are mean. They're mean.
Yeah, that's why I called them misanthropes, Cass.
Yeah, but you just can't make an assumption because somebody studies ballet, number one, that they're this or they're that, or that they...
Ronnie Reagan studied ballet.
Well, and he's probably one, and he's probably one too, if you ask him. Now, I've got
I don't care if he's gay, though.
And if he is, what the hell difference does it make to anybody else? If he is who he is, people should just accept the person for who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I
about the GOP though.
Yeah, and Larry, I agree with you in every in the very essence of what you said, but it is not the case in this country. And you know what? And not to raise something that was said a little bit ago, but you know, Jay Cruzan asserted that, well, you know, it's going to die off. Well, we started saying that with Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And yet these little generations of racists keep popping up. Now, if you can afford, if y'all can afford me 2 minutes and 33 seconds, I think I have a lovely example here. It's audio. Apparently, this Greg Gutfeld guy over on Fox News Radio Rwanda is said to be some sort of humorist. Although, when you start trying to figure out what's funny to right wingers, you realize it's not funny at all. Because if they can't slur somebody or they can't demean someone, it isn't humorous. So, just this turns out to be because they're very mad at him too. The right wing. This turns out to be about Neil deGrasse Tyson. Okay? Neil deGrasse Tyson, who earned, let's see here, a Bachelor of Arts in Physics from Harvard, got a Master's degree in Astronomy from the University of Texas at Austin, which has a fabulous astronomy department. He got a second master's degree in astrophysics from Columbia University, and then he got a doctorate in astrophysics also at Columbia University. Why it's important to note that will become apparent. This is only 2 minutes and 33 seconds. I won't interrupt it. Stand by.
IQ, astrophysicist, you're right. Neil deGrasse Tyson worries that super smart aliens have visited Earth and thought we were dumb.
My great fear is that we've in fact been visited by intelligent aliens.
Right.
But they chose not to make contact. On the conclusion that there's no sign of intelligent life on Earth.
And what might aliens think of Earth's signals?
We were sending signals out before we were doing it on purpose.
Right.
Okay. Our early TV shows, you know, like I Love Lucy and the Honeymooners and that sort of thing, or radio, Howdy Doody, you know, these are our cultural emissaries. These are the first things aliens will decode about our civilization. They will learn how men and women treat each other by watching The Honeymooners.
I don't know what's worse, him ragging on some classic American television or Christopher Hayes laughing,
giggling,
chortling over really, really bad jokes. I don't even know where to start, except, Gavin, you have a look of pain. I hate this guy. Okay.
I remember hearing Chris Hardwick on a podcast talk about Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he was just salivating. White liberal nerds love this guy so much, he could defecate on them like Martin Bashir's fantasies,
and
they would dance in the streets.
Do I have to edit that out?
All he does is he's drunk with adulation. And he talks about things like, when I was young in New York, I would get racially profiled when I go into stores. Back then, he looked like he was in the Warriors. He had a huge afro and a cut-off shirt, and New York was a war zone. Sorry, you fit the profile. And all
Why did we get into this? I want to talk about aliens.
All he does is complain about his lot in life, and if we gave him Carl Sagan's job, he's
aliens.
A nightmare, this guy.
Aliens.
You got to come down on the liberal intellectual thing again, though. But speaking of aliens, I can't stand liberal intellectuals. And this idea that somehow they get to look down on the rest of the human race, it's no wonder the extraterrestrials don't contact us. We don't have any pride in ourselves. And besides, he's a racist. He attacked Desi Arnaz.
Oh, there you go. That's
true. Oh, God.
Who wants to scream first?
Okay, my turn. I want to.
Okay, Sergi.
Okay, three things. Number one, pot calling the kettle black, no pun intended. They're calling him a racist? Number two, who are these clowns? Are they the Fox and Friends crew?
This is a program on Fox that's called The Red Eye.
Oh, okay. Because I mean, obviously, I don't watch Fox, so I was thinking, you know, when I think about round table show on Fox,
it's an attempt to be right wing and edgy. I guess kind of it's set up in a format similar, I guess, to Bill Maher's. But the voices you heard, one of them, the guy who was upset about Neil deGrasse Tyson once upon having a big natural, that was let's see, who was that? A guy named Gavin McInnes. He's the guy who said that it was okay to profile Neil deGrasse Tyson. Greg Gutfeld was an astrophysicist. Yeah, right. Except he's got a goddamn doctorate in astrophysics, which apparently doesn't count because it must have been some sort of affirmative. It must be some sort of affirmative action astrophysics. And then the third voice you heard was none other than Pornstache Bolton. Okay.
Well, and my. You know, third thing is, this group, they would not know class if it slammed into them. Good grief.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, Neil deGrasse Tyson could have used some other more stirring examples. For instance, if you want to talk about things going out into space for the aliens to check out, long before Ralph Cramden ever said, "To the moon, Alice!" And everybody laughed at the idea of a guy beating up his wife. You had Amos and Andy on the radio. And I will not do any of the voices from that out of some modicum of respect. Or you had Rochester and Jack Benny. Oh, Rochester! And my Jack Benny's terrible, but...
Yeah, but wait, though. If we're going to talk about Jack Benny, there was a little bit of the subversive for Jack Benny, though.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Part of the whole thing of him, well, for example, there was this one skit that I remember. Jack comes in, the phone is ringing. And I know for young people today, you know, the idea of, what do you mean the phone's ringing? Why are you running to get it? But, you know, he's trying to get in the house and get
right,
his key out of the
door
and put his packages down and get to the phone. And, you know, he picks the phone up and he's like, you know, who's there? He goes, oh, didn't get it in time. He turns around, he smells cigar smoke. Turns around, is Rochester wearing a smoking jacket and in his recliner reading a book. And he goes, didn't you hear the phone ring? He goes, yeah, man.
He goes, well, you were right here all, the whole time? He goes, yeah. He goes, why didn't you answer? He says, man, it's my day off. And he was allowed to get away with this. You know, he said many times that he had as many women as he had on his show, and he would have had one in Rochester if he had been allowed to have. But, you know, because he felt that it was his show and he should be able to do this, and he was, you know, given some leeway. But that was the only space where they actually gave him that kind of room. If you remember correctly, Lucille Ball never had anybody a caller on her show.
It's true.
And, you know, it was their show, right? Desi Lu was Desi's thing.
Yeah, at least.
She didn't have a person of color on her show until it was the Lu's show.
Yeah.
How many decades later, you know?
Yeah, up in what, the mid to late 70s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we just got a note in from Michael under the subject line valet. And Michael says that he did valet slur just kills me. Cheerleading in college and going AWOL from the Air Force was perfectly fine for dim leader. Why not Bergdahl for president? Yeah, see,
well, just mentioning that is going to get.
And see, that's wealth. And see that right there, that's wealth privilege.
But you know what, though? Since we're going to talk about Bergdahl again, I mean, John Bolton was part of this this clusterfuck that you just played. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I mean, John Bolton shouldn't have anything to say about anything, you know, because if we're going to talk about trading, he was down with Iran-Contra, was he not?
Yeah.
All right. And in terms of morality and being a bigot, John Bolton is known for this in D.C., is he not?
He is.
Yeah, he's known for being a bully.
And a bloodthirsty war criminal, but I guess we're just piling on now, aren't we?
Well, yeah, because it turns out that the former Central Intelligence Agency cat is now saying that Bergdahl tried to actually join the Taliban. Well, Duane Clarge has a history. Let's go on YouTube. There's a very famous clip of him having a discussion with John Pilger, where he basically says that the world is just going to have to do what the U.S. says, and that's it. If you don't like it, lump it. That's what he says. That's what he says. So, you know, this is the level of political clarity that we have in the United States. And I know, you know, going back to racism for a second, because a lot of this, you know, really can be tied into the Bergdahl thing. If you're not willing to be honest about yourself, it's like I have to be honest as a male about my own privilege, which doesn't particularly make me feel comfortable. You know, I mean, here it is. We're all going to have to start doing this. White people in general. But everybody who lives in North America in general is going to have to start really asking themselves, what the hell is this all about? You know, especially when we have McCain, you know, wanting to let the guy go, and now he's saying it was a mistake, and you got all these people who are now trying to bleach out their Twitter and Facebook accounts, all these politicians that were for this, now they're against it, now the lies are popping up, you know, now they're attacking his parents. They're trying to tie all of this into Obama. They're saying that this is the worst, you know, thing that could happen under international and federal law. We can't allow this to happen. You know, really, the first prejudice that we had to deal with is this national prejudice that the United States is beyond reproach. You know, because really, you just had Obama say the other day during the D-Day thing that he believes in American exceptionalism. So, I mean, for those of you here who support, you know, Obama, I mean, what do you have to say about that?
Well, the thing I would love to see is for, I would love to just have Barack Obama, because I don't know what the man thinks about his own intelligence, but I know from what I've learned from Dr. Bill over the last years, there are very few people who know what Dr. Bill knows. And I would love, and it's out there, and I've run it on the Horn rerun stream a number of times. I've even run it during this program, I think. I would love to have Barack Obama sit down and listen to Dr. Bill's explanation of what American exceptionalism really means. Because there is an American exceptionalism that is not the hateful, rotten, filthy thing that... that the right wing have turned it into, where American exceptionalism is defined by the fact that we can bomb anybody we like. American exceptionalism, as Dr. Bill explains it, is a state of mind whereby one, and it starts with, it very clearly starts with religious, very overt religious motives, but it is about the idea of building a community whereby everyone prospers when everyone prospers. When the well-being of the whole community defines the well-being of the one. And it truly is that Spocky thing about, and there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, where the good of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And that, yeah, but, you know, that's the real American exceptionalism.
We've been hearing that for how long, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute, though, Bob. That's communism.
Well, yeah, kind of. And so were the original founders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. But the other side of that, and it's the dirty side of it, is the fact that all of this was, all of this defining of community was done with complete disregard for the people whose land it actually was. And that same God who was telling the Massachusetts Bay Colony how to order an exceptional community also told them that, well, okay, yeah, so steal the land from the people who have been living here for the last 20,000 years. And that is what corrupts the process from jump. Hope that wasn't too preachy.
No, I mean, that's
amen,
not even
Brother
nearly
Bob.
Enough. Yeah. That's not even nearly enough. I mean, it's hard for me to look at what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and now what's happening in Africa, right? And, well, for that matter, even South America in terms of Colombia. And, you know, to hear Obama say, oh, well, you know, democracy, this, that, and the other. I mean, look at what's going on in occupied Palestine right now. You know, Netanyahu and the rest of the Likud, you know, they're jumping up and down as if, you know, this is the end of the world because now there's a unity government with the Palestinians.
Yeah, and they just punished the unity government by announcing a bunch more
settlements
in the occupied territories. I mean, Jesus.
I mean, everybody who's on this call right now is paying for this.
Yeah, and it's being done in your
name.
And, well, with the exception of, did Jeffrey already say? No, Jeffrey's still here. With the exception of Jeffrey.
You know, I mean, you know, this is supposed to be the American exceptionalism that he's talking about where, you know, here it is. I mean, look, Hamas is a really not too nice organization. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. They're religious based. You know, they use violence. I mean, that's part of their M.O. Matter of fact, they were even created by the Israeli state. Because, you know, the PLO was left-wing. So if you want to get rid of a left-wing organization, what do? You know, you take conservatives, you neoconservatives, you know, especially if they're religious, and you throw them in. You know, and then that's what happened.
Yeah,
with
just
that.
To squirrel then, the mix.
Yes, yeah, no, right? So then it turns out that they became, you know, a force. They grew, you know, on their own. They started making their own connections with whatever the hell. They grew. So then he couldn't control them anymore. They became their own entity. So then they turned around and become political. They were told to become political. They won a democratic election, right? Abbas got less than 10% of the entire vote. And even then, almost all of that was in the West Bank. You know, so in terms of punishment, this is the second time they're being punished for following the rules. But on the other hand, no, we have some real serious nutcases like the MEC over in Iran because they have a problem with the current configuration there. They're very conservative. They've went against U.S. interests in Iran before. This is common knowledge. Bob Baer, former CIA man, this has all been discussed. Because we just mentioned Duane Clarence not too long ago, right? This has all been discussed. Now, they were on the terrorist watch list for years because they've acted against U.S. interests. Well, they started lobbying with Republicans. I mean, there were some Democrats in there, too, but Rudolph Giuliani was part of the crust that got paid. Go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you all the way.
You know, they got paid, right? So that's okay. You know.
I mean, Hamas, like I said, is anybody who is somewhat secular in the Gaza or on the West Bank do not want Hamas in. They've already talked about what they're going to do with the women. They're going to put the, you know, the veil on them. They've already started getting rid of marijuana dealers and things and people who are dealing with the black market. You know, I mean, they are not at all cool. But, you know, here it is that they are supposedly trying to be legit, and this happens. And we hear all of this rhetoric, and then you have the MEC, which are really violent people we will really want to have absolutely nothing to do with as American taxpayers. But we have politicians who are lobbying for them. Looks like Peter King, Representative Peter King. Here he is, everything that he said about the Occupy movement, and here he is a supporter of the Irish Republican Army. You know, right. Why isn't this up for discussion?
Right, because all of these things are examples of the... I think I'm about to create a neologism, the cafeteriaism of the right wing. It's not bad as long as they endorse it. Bringing Bo Bergdahl home was a big deal, and they signed petitions, and they hooted and hollered about what a traitor Barack Obama was. You've left him over there for these five long years. Then he brings him home, and the minute he does, the same people who were tweeting, bring him home, tweet, impeach the blah president.
Yeah, because they want to have credit for it. That's why.
Larry, because they are opponents for opposition's sake. Because they are essentially and irredeemably racist. Okay, there are lots of different kinds of racism. There's the ham-fisted, heavy-handed racism of separate but equal, and the Jim Crow South, and lynchings, and night riders. And men gunned down in their driveways, and fire hoses turned on marchers, and state troopers with batons turned on people marching peacefully along a highway. That's one kind. Then there's the kind that is manifesting itself now. And like I said last night, when it becomes so obvious that a man bathed in, and clothed in the privilege that John D. Rockefeller IV, my senator, is, can see it, it is undeniably real. Because even John D. Rockefeller said in a hearing a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that the right wing despises Barack Obama because of the color of his skin. Mm-hmm. Which is absolutely lunatic when you can, and see, I gotta be careful, see, no, it's not lunatic, it's not crazy, it's not nuts, it is just brutally evil. And it's made particularly evil because they are doing all this to a man who, in large part, as Angry has just pointed out, is doing their bidding.
Yep.
I mean, white America should love Barack Obama.
Well,
I mean, you know, he lets you spit on him and make fun of his family and insult his children and insult his wife, insult his mother-in-law, you know, insult her ancestors by dragging the statue down.
Get this. Benny, pointed something out on my Facebook page within the last day or so, of a study that's been done on racism as it presently exists. And do you know that there has become a bias in this country? No, sit down. This isn't duct tape and tennis ball material, but it's just sort of, oh my God, really material. There is now in this country a bias, a measurable, definable bias against the breed of animal known as the Portuguese water dog. Because the Obamas have one.
I don't know why people... I mean, what? I'm not surprised by that, Bob. And you shouldn't be either. Like, we've seen this movie before. And I told my wife this. I said, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. Because, you know, there's going to be a shock thing that comes in first. I figured for the first term, the first 4 years, you know, a lot of people, not just white people, just people in general, are going to have to get used to this. Because it's not like we believe in ourselves and we say, oh, yeah, well, he's going to go up there and do something. No, we're just glad to see somebody who looks like us up there
even though he's not doing a damn thing for us.
Well, look, consider what I call the insulation effect, and that is this. Right now, there is an absolute cult of right-wing adoration for a quack by the name of Dr. Ben Carson. Greg Gutfeld said, yeah, right, about Neil deGrasse Tyson being an astrophysicist. Well, I go about Dr. Ben Carson, because this man quit being a doctor a long time ago when he became a right-wing political apparatchik. And of course, this Dr. Ben Carson is beloved of the right wing because he has dark skin, and yet he says the kind of hate-filled, misanthropic crap they love to hear.
Yeah, but don't forget about him as soon as he's useless to them. I mean, where's Michael Steele?
Yep.
Where's Herman Cain?
Yep.
Michael Steele's on MSNBC.
Yeah, he's getting paid.
Oh, well, he's getting paid, but, I mean, they're not pointing to him until they find him useful again. You know, I mean, Armstrong Williams.
Yeah.
He'll take a quarter of a million to push No Child Left Behind.
Where's Alan? You know, where's Alan Keyes?
That's, yeah.
He's on television.
Yeah. How about, and this is my favorite because it was his own daddy who really paid to him, J.C. Watts.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, and the other question is, why is there not a place for Glenn Ford or for Bill Fletcher or for any of those people so we could hear those people on, you know.
Well, they're left wing, but when I did see Glenn Ford not too long ago, he was going against Dr. Dyson, and they just kept using so many big words and trying to out-intellectualize each other, it ended up going nowhere.
Hey, can I bring into this conversation as we wrap it up? And by the way, you want to know how things go? Ferg, my son Ferg, because he was sitting in here when he heard me say that the only person who had stepped up to answer Sparky's pull the pin challenge was Thomas. Ferg just sent in out of money he got doing odd jobs. Ferg just sent in a contribution. Can you believe that?
You're kidding.
No.
That's good.
So you know, we've now only got $90 to go to meet your challenge, Sparky, and I hope people will.
I hope so too.
Yeah. Just in the time remaining, and I would appreciate the group's input on this because I didn't know quite what to make of it. In D.C., at the Gallery Place Chinatown Metro station entrance, which is a really, really busy metro station entrance right there by the Chinatown gate. And I've seen them more than once. There are a group of people who set up with graphic posters that declare Barack Obama is the black genocide abortion president, with a picture, of course, of the bloody fetus. And they've got a chart showing who among indigenous peoples are which of the lost tribes of Israel. It surprised me, and might come as a surprise to our Amerindian friends, to know that they are all members of the tribe of Gad. He can.
Sorry. So.
This is where I feel like I'm on perhaps dangerous ground, because I want badly to understand, and yet at the same time, hate is hate is hate. These guys with the microphone were all black, and they were all furious, and they were all describing the coming race war when justice will finally be meted out and whitey going to be chopping cotton. And it was, But the central thing was apparently the appropriation of the and I've come up with this little short statement that I've been using in a discussion on Facebook. Culture is not commodity. I don't care whose culture it is. If you're not part of that culture, you don't get to appropriate it. In other words, if you're Pharrell or if you're Mary Fallon, governor of Oklahoma's daughter, you don't get to be photographed in a Native American war bonnet.
That's exactly right.
And say that it's okay. Well, so here are these dudes who are standing outside the Chinatown station in D.C. Screaming some really, really nasty stuff about killing Whitey and stuff like that. And they're all wearing the symbolic regalia of Judaism.
Oh, so you met up, you're talking about the Islamic Hebrews. Okay.
The who what's?
They call themselves the Islamic Hebrews.
Well, no, because somewhere along the way they were also referring to God as Jah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was apparently some, I don't know, what would you call it? Distaff Rastafarianism worked in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hodgepodge of a lot of stuff, but in the mid to late 60s, you had some brothers that they were really reading the Bible deep. I mean, deep. And they decided that...
Was there acid involved, Angry?
No, black folks didn't really do acid.
Oh, see, there's that shiny white privilege.
Wait a minute.
Explain Hendrix to me, then.
You know, Jesus is a black man.
Wait. Black people don't do acid. Explain Hendrix to me.
No, Hendrix was Hendrix. He also was from Seattle.
And he was black.
On the whole, there's certain
but he was black.
And George Clinton? I mean...
George Clinton, again, is not the average brother. You have to understand something.
But he's
black. Just because
somebody's
black doesn't mean they can walk in every circle.
Okay, but let's not...
But you said...
Let's not get... Wait.
Don't do acid.
But I'm desperately...
I mean, I'm getting kind of tired of getting blanket statements thrown around and me getting covered with it.
Well,
when I point it out, it's an
one
exception.
One particular individual and say he represents the whole. See, that doesn't work either. I'm generalizing.
But you throw that back and say that, you know, about white privilege is a blanket statement.
Oh, white privilege is a blanket statement?
Yeah.
Prove to me that white privilege doesn't exist. And do so well,
for all people. I'll prove to you that white privilege doesn't exist for me.
No, we're not talking about you. We're not talking
about general.
You. This isn't about an individual. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about you.
I understand. Okay.
See, when white people get off this, just like I get off the idea, well, you know, I'm not a bad man, but other men are bad. No, see, that's nonsense. We all got to take responsibility.
That's right. You know, if I grew up in a racist culture, I'm a racist because...
In Mississippi, and I worked at a TV station where 70% of the staff were black. And while I was sitting in the newsroom, I had a black photographer pull a set of scissors on me and stuck them right up to my neck. And what was I supposed to do?
But if
I call the cops, I mean, I'm in trouble.
But what we're saying...
What does that have to do with what we're talking about?
What it has to do is that I was a low man on a totem pole. There was black privilege going on there.
You were a low man on a totem pole for about 5 seconds, and that was you. We're not talking about you.
You're making blanket statements now, mister. You got to back that shit up.
Well, back up what? You're talking about the world revolves around you. Why do you assume that the world revolves around you?
Oh, nobody said the world revolves around me.
What's going on here? Time out. I'm just pulling the slide down. Wait. We are talking here about the difference between populations and individuals. And that is one of the toughest concepts to get one's head around. I had a hard time with it learning about evolution. Populations evolve, individuals do not. To talk about white privilege, to talk about male privilege, to talk about wealth privilege is not to talk about any one individual's whiteness, maleness, or wealthiness. It is to talk about a cultural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is impugning you, Todd. We are speaking in general terms.
I had two black people here.
Wait, please, Todd.
I mean, I'm happy to bow out of.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
I did.
Oh, yeah. You sabered him.
But you know, the point here, no one is being individually attacked. And everybody has a story where someone has disagreed with someone else. There's no getting around that. But it does not negate the reality of phenomena that occur cross culturally. Is this making any sense?
The thing is,
nobody really can say anything here because we are out of time. So I'm hoping maybe...
Can I tell a quick story to close it out?
If you can make it real quick, Sparky.
Okay. A Bible thumper gal comes to the door today. She knocks on the door. I open the door. I say, not interested. And then she goes, well, I have a question for you. Why do you have this sign with this finger pointing down taped to the wall? And I said, because the doorbell's underneath there for people that are too stupid. It means don't knock on the door, ring the doorbell.
That's downright zen, Sparky.
Oh, boy.
That closes it out.
Yeah, it is time to wrap it up. And I want to thank Asa and Michael both for stepping into the breach this evening. We have gotten... We are now halfway to meeting Sparky's pull the pin challenge. Hopefully we'll make up the other $50 and the other $80 that go with it and start Monday outside of the hole. Thank you for a vigorous and invigorating discussion on this Friday on the front porch. It is time to get out of here. Everybody, please have a wonderful weekend, and remember that... The Horn Molloy Skype chat group will be going full on beginning about 12:05 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to you with the kind contributions of your time, your ideas, your discussion. Thank you very much, one and all, for your financial contributions that go toward keeping this on the air. This ain't a business. We're not selling anything. Thank you. We're just maintaining an independent media presence that wouldn't be here without you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia for all that he does with the website and with the technology here and helping to keep it working low these 10 years running. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for all that he does to make sure the stream goes out and the podcasts go up. Thank you, Ben. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.